Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 4th, 2005. Today's session is Spirituality and Discernment, presented by Al Roll in the Fireside Room, disc number ROA 2005-01.
Welcome, everyone. I am so delighted to see all of you here, to have an interest in this word called discernment. And when you look at your handout, you may have some questions, because it is kind of it may be a little vague to you, but we'll get into that after some other preparation that I have. First thing I'd like to read for you, or actually, the first thing I'd like to do is to sing together, because Holiness is celebrating this year that passage in Exodus about Moses coming to the burning bush and God giving him a direct command, or, you know, this is what you're going to be doing. Take off your shoes, this is holy ground. And I still presume we're standing on holy ground in this day and age. And there's a song that was written called Holy Ground. And some of you know it, and it's so easy to, it's not on a sheet or anything. But we'll begin with that tune. To kind of get us there. This is holy ground. We're standing on holy ground. For the Lord is present, and where God is holy. This is holy. Services coordinator or chaplain, and people call me all kinds of different things there. But I also do spiritual direction, have been doing it for about 16, 17 years, and really have a passion for it. And that's why I'm really glad to be here at Holden. To start with, I just want to read a little story from Does God Have a Big Toe? By Mark Gelman, who is a Jewish rabbi who writes midrashes, and it's called Stories About Stories in the Bible. And the reason I'm going to read this is in order to discern, we've got to stop and have some kind of Sabbath or some kind of reflection. And the story is from Adam in the garden telling the animals what to do and giving them lists. And the title of it is called No Lists on the Sabbath. I know you wish you could have lived in the Garden of Eden. I know. Great weather, no problems, good food, and water that doesn't taste funny. But believe me when I tell you that the Garden of Eden was no piece of cake. because Adam lived there, and Adam was a list maker. In fact, Adam was the worst list maker of all time. The elephant woke up one morning to find his trunk stuck through a huge leaf on which Adam had written in berry ink, "Elephant list for today. 1. Dump all the broken branches outside the garden. 2. Hose down the dirty dishes. 3. Squash some coconuts for lunch." The monkey woke up one morning to find a banana peel tied around its tail on which Adam had written in berry ink, "Monkey list for today. 1. Dump the rotten fruit outside the garden. 2. Pick bananas for supper. 3. Don't eat the bananas you pick for supper." Come morning, almost every animal woke up with a list, and all day long Adam would scurry around checking up on the animals and pestering them to see how they were coming with their lists. One day, the animals got together and said to God, "This guy, Adam, is such a pest. Can't you move us out of here? Or better yet, can't you move him out of here?" God said, "Wait for the Sabbath. There's no lists on the Sabbath." On the morning of the seventh day, Adam woke up bright and early to find his lists. He went to get his berry ink pot to write out a list for the elephant, but the ink was dry. "No problem," said Adam. "I just want to go out and pick some more berries for the inkwell." But when Adam came to the berry patch, all the berries were gone. "I bet this is the work of the monkey," Adam complained. "But not to worry. I will scratch out my lists for all the animals in the sand on the beach." Adam took a stick and started writing lists on the sand, on the wet sand. But a wave came along and erased all the lists. Adam thought, this was very strange, because the Garden of Eden was near a river. He had never before seen a wave that big in the river. So Adam sat down to rest, and he felt good, just resting. Then the monkey came by. "No lists on the Sabbath," he chirped. And the elephant came by and trumpeted, "No lists on the Sabbath." And the animals all wished Adam a good day of rest. I don't know about you, but I'm a list maker. List mode is not the best for reflecting on things. In fact, it sets us up to be controlled by our own self, or by other people, or by a parent that brought us up that way, or whatever. So, we need Sabbath, and that's why I'm glad you're here. The other thing I want to do about this discerning here, the discernment can only be done, again, when we stop and reflect. And people do that in all kinds of different ways. One way is people do that while they drive, and they're able to reflect just by riding in a car. Some by playing an instrument. Some by walking in this beautiful Holden Village area here. Doesn't take much, and we kind of switch into a different frame of mind. And that would be called a time when you are ready to make some kind of discernment. So, with that premise, I want to also share a little bit about myself next. And this is called a cycle of storm and call. The call of God would be wonderful if we didn't have storms, right, in our lives. There's always a storm coming on the brink of what we do. And this is a story of my life, weaving in the storm and the call. And I did this for a group of people that were taking a 9-month retreat in daily life, which is offered in Seattle, that follows the exercises of Ignatius Loyola. And this was about the call, the discerning the call. My journey with Jesus has been a constant cycle of storm and call. Never just one storm or one call. I remember getting married and living in a small Oregon town. Lori, my new bride, worked nights at a small hospital, and I was an elementary art teacher working very hard. But really enjoying it. I served 2 schools with 600 kids. So I was pretty good with names at the end of that job. And I enjoyed creativity in people. I still loved my job, but Lori was depressed, lonely, and sad. We couldn't even sleep together, being newly married, since she worked the night shift. We clearly experienced a storm, but we soon stumbled upon an opportunity God laid in our lap. Lutheran Outdoor Ministries had a shared job where we could be together managing a retreat center and cooking for adults. We quit our jobs and moved. When groups were not there, we could enjoy the river, 80 acres of cedar meadows, and the quiet of the rural setting. We were not to host just an ecclesiastical hotel, but a ministry with special retreat offerings, as well as being a retreat rental place. This was a call. After 4 years there, we lost our executive director, our booking secretary, and went without salary for 3 months due to finances. We got tired of the routine. This was a storm. We had joined a Lutheran church, and later they had an opening for a director of youth and education and were interested in hiring me and letting us rent a house next to the church. They had no one else in mind for this call, so I knew it was right. 2 years later, another call came to us. Our call as parents of twins, Luke and Rachel. But a storm was brewing in the church community. The beloved pastor who was my partner in ministry left. An interim came, and then a new pastor who proceeded to split the church and cause many divisions arrived. He concluded, my plans were to leave anyways, so he decided to end my position without my consultation. I was given a few months to find a new position. This was another storm. The friends we had in the congregation were confused and dismayed. I found a new call in Tacoma, but it was not a good fit and lasted only 9 months, the year of Desert Storm. With 2 2-year-olds and the job of youth director, I became torn with depression. For the first time in my life, my life was unmanageable without medications. Another storm. Finally, I visited a friend who knew a pastor in Seattle who might be looking for an associate in ministry, which I was. This was another call, and I could feel it after the phone call to Pastor June, who wanted to visit with me right away. A call soon came after a few interviews, and I resigned in Tacoma. This caused a storm in the Tacoma church, They gave me no going away party. I got out of Dodge quick. My new partner, Pastor June, was a writer and loved the arts. And my job was not youth ministry, but the ministry of the whole life of the congregation. We as a family were happy with this new call and welcomed. We had 12 wonderful and stormy years at the church, and I worked with 3 different pastors. The kids grew up and bonded with the community. And my 11th year, a new storm brewed with the declining attendance and financial resources of the church. A huge shortfall brought the church council to make a drastic decision. My position would need to be cut. They allowed me to stay at 3/4 time for 1 more year, but then I needed to look elsewhere for my future. In the next few days, I received an email from the personnel chair, who just happened to be the president of the Foss Home Board. It read, "Our chaplain resigned. You might want to look at this opportunity." This was my next call, and after an exciting 1.5-hour interview talk, I knew this was where I was to go. I was celebrated for my years at the church and began work at Foss the next day. The calls and storms come and go at Foss Home. I am my own person. I sing songs, teach, preach, offer comfort with families and residents at the stormy times of death. I listen, I touch. My kids are a stormy 16 years old. Many times I give thanks for the one who did come along to save the day. But I know the time of safety with Jesus is short-lived. A life is a cycle of storm and call over and over. And my closing song here. My life goes on in endless song of a verse lamentation. I hear the sweet, those far off hymn that hails a new creation. No storm can shake my inmost calm when to that rock I'm clinging. For Christ is Lord of heaven and earth. How can I keep from singing? Well, that tells you a little bit about me. And I'm sure that your life is probably no different. Many people claim one call. Others, the life is full of little calls, changes, and storms which are actually welcome storms because they bring you to a new place and open up new doors for you. And all of this is under the umbrella of God's love. God has loved us from the very beginning. On this sheet here, a little background on Ignatius Loyola. His life was a very, the story of him is really interesting because when he was young, like all people when we're young, and we think back upon it, it's so important to be recognized by something we do or something that we are. And he would go after being a knight. back in the 1700s. That was his goal. And not only being a knight and a fierce warrior, but one who captures the damsels in distress kind of thing. This, you know, being a ladies' man and everything else. Well, he was in a battle, and they blew off his leg. And he had to recover from that injury. And he had a good doctor who reattached the leg, and he had a lot of time to think about his life. And he studied two sources. One was a story of knights and knighthood, and the other was stories of the saints. And as he read the stories of the knights, he got very excited. You know, he just couldn't wait to get his self back into battle. But when he read the stories about the saints, he was also excited and wanted to be like those people that worked for God and did great things for God. And he decided that since that kept with him longer, in other words, the stories of knighthood faded quite quickly, and yet the stories of the saints and the excitement he felt about doing things for God stayed with him for a long time. And when you're incapacitated, you're more in touch with those inner feelings. Well, when they put back his leg on, you know, when he received this leg, he was not satisfied with it when he walked around, so he broke it again and had him do it again. That's just how, you know, important it was to him for him to be right and to be one who is in control. Well, he went on to do these things for God. He said, "I'm going to hang up the knighthood idea." This is a kind of a very much abbreviated story, but he went on to do things for God, and he eventually discovered that it wasn't the doing things for God that was important, but it was to receive the grace of God and to live a life where he was constantly available to God in every situation, at all times. And through that, he started an educational system of the Jesuits. And that was his transformation. His transformation was from following the lists that he was supposed to do and doing things for God, to be just available, to live amongst the people of God, and to share how people grow to that transforming freedom that he called of this being available to God. So what you have in your hands here are some suggestions that he wrote down way back then about how do you discern God's call in your life. And he says there's three times when a correct and good choice can be made. And this is not written in stone, and I'm not advocating this is the only way. It's certainly not doing that. But he said, in a time of deep faith, when there is no hesitation or possibility of confusion about the visitation of God's grace. And as I look back on my own life, when I sat in that half-hour interview with the CEO from the nursing home, I was not qualified for that job according to what they wrote up. But after talking to that person, I walked out of there knowing that there was no question, this is where I was to go. Number two, he said, in the time of discerning one's decision by sorting through the consolations and desolations. In other words, if I would make this decision to do this, what would be the times, what would be my consolation in that? What would be my desolation? Weighing those out, kind of saying, you know, if I can picture myself, and he would always imagine this, imagine myself in that position or in a new marriage or something, what would be the consolations of that? And then what would be the hard times that I can see right now? And Ignatius believed that we are in constant swing from consolation to desolation. He believed that life was not always up here. And he said that it's good to remember when you're down here that you were up here before. And it's good to remember when you're up here that you were down here. And that you're, you know, tomorrow that may be true of you. Which is really, I thought, a wonderful way to look at what life is all about. And that sometimes God is all part of that. By the desolation, the storms, you receive something, a grace in that. And the thing that really touched me when I was doing work with these Jesuits, because I'm a Lutheran, I didn't know about this, was they would ask, what is the grace in all this? And it could be a horrendous thing that happened. What is the grace in this? And I could not believe that they would ask that. What is it? Tsunami, what is the grace in that? And somebody say, it's nothing. But again, if there's nothing, then it's total despair. You know, it's a way of lifting up. What? If God is with us now and forever, we have freedom. There is freedom. There is hope. Third thing, in time of tranquility, there are two ways of choosing. One, here's a conscious, logical way. Some of you are very logical, rational in your minds and ways of coming up with things and making decisions. For you, he says, a spirit of faith, freedom, as a balance at equilibrium. I looked at that this afternoon and I had difficulty saying, now, how am I going to reframe that? I think it means that our faith is strong. We could either take this, we could do this, make this decision this way or this way. Either way would be okay. That's freedom. You have the freedom to do that. Second thing, in spirit of prayer, seeking only God's will. What would God want me to do here? Always having that on your mind. While I'm at Holden, what is it that God really would will me to do here? You know, that's another time, or in the future. Weighing the pros and cons of each option. Making a list and saying, oh, I got pros are only this, and cons are, you know, sometimes people have dreams of decisions, and they've got cons all over the place, but there's something drawing them to make that decision. Being persuaded by what will do more good. Being persuaded by what will do more good. In other words, not looking at myself and what is going to do the world or the community or another person more good. Boy, did that ever hit me with the work in the nursing home. I'm amazed at what good can be reaped from my constantly being there rather than being in the church, sitting at committee meetings and all the time that, you know, I don't think I really use my time well. At the home, I use my time. And I still study too. I take breaks. I need to. And then finally, after my decision has been confirmed, in other words, what is it that confirms that decision? By another person, by God, by a circumstance in your life, what is it that really confirms that decision? And you say, I'm going there. Right? Okay, this is for people like me, intuition, imagination, seeking God's love and will. In doing what I'm going to do next in my life or next week, I'm seeking God's love and will. Challenging myself to the best advice and highest hopes I would have for another. In other words, if I was talking to somebody about this very decision, what would I say to that person? If that person was me, how would I challenge them? And then turn around and just look at yourself and say, huh, you're the other person. looking at the decision from the point of view of my death. In other words, when people remember you, if you can imagine people speaking at your service of celebration of life, what will they say about you? And what, you know, what will you have as your legacy in this life? That's important. And then finally, aware of what implications this decision has for the final judgment. Now, again, there's a lot there. What is God going to look at as far as our life? I don't want to say accomplish. How were you amongst my people? I think is what God will probably ask. How were you? So those are the three that he has. And then he goes on, seven essential elements of discernment. These are elements that we need to have, that we desire, underline, to become closer to Christ, to know him, love him, and follow his path, or God's path. I should change this here. But this is, again, directly from Ignatius. That we will pray throughout our discernment, that we'll be in prayer for that, maybe that, you know, right now it's not clear, and that we wherever we are okay. That we will be aware of the blind spots and attachments and try to make decisions from our areas of freedom. Blind spots, attachments. What is it that we're holding on so tightly to that we can't let go to make this decision? What is it we need to... in fact, Ignatius would say that, and this is also a Buddhist thing, that we get attached to things and we don't want to let go. And the freedom comes is when we hold on lightly and are able to let go of whatever it is that we're attached to. That we get all the information about our choice that we can. All the information. That we carefully consider both cons and pros, again, that's a repeat. That our decision or choice will fit with who we believe we are in our best and deepest selves. Who am I? And what gives me life? There's a couple of books that I recommended that are in the bookstore. This one is called Sleeping with Bread. It says, Holding What Gives You Life. And it's a very simple book. It talks about when you look back at your day, what about your day gave you life? What was it that really brought energy to your life? Excitement, joy. And you give thanks for that. And also think about what was it during the day that drew you down, that took life from you, that was just, oh, this is really hard. I feel diminished here. Good little book, easily read, lots of different ideas about how to approach that as different questions about what you can use. It's got cartoons and some other ways to look. When was I happiest today? When was I saddest? When did I feel most alive today? When did I feel life draining out of me? Etc. So that's available in the bookstore. And finally, that we will be open to signs of internal confirmation, joy and peace, and external confirmation. How is this decision working out? As I do this new thing that I've decided to do, where's the joy? Is it happening? And how is it working out? Because we're free to choose, and then if we find that there's no joy in it, and that there's no, it's not working out, we can decide again. We can discern again. That's the amazing thing about our relationship with this loving God, who cares about us more than we can ever know. Another book, there's two books that I recommended for those of you who want to go deeper. The Dark Night of the Soul by Gerald May talks about a God that we cannot even describe. So deep and so mysterious. And that a fear of this mysterious, loving God is what takes us away from that confidence that we are loved. And he's a fellow that's been around, he's a psychologist and also a spiritual director, and he lives with cancer. So he's writing from that point of view. And it is a very, very enlightening book because he takes two mystics, John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila, and talks about how they related to prayer and how people moved from one way of praying to a new way of praying. And The Dark Night of the Soul is, in some ways, not as you first imagine what it is. Dark night is that God works where we cannot understand. God works so beneath our consciousness that we can't understand it. That's the dark. In the dark, we are formed. Just like in the womb we're formed each day of our lives. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful, easy reading. Not many pages, but you know, just take a little bit at a time and just kind of absorb it. Who are John of the Cross and Teresa Avila would take too much time. I want to have some time for discussion here. And the discussion questions are in the bottom of your sheet there. And at this point, I just want to open it up to questions about what I went through, that something's not clear, or just anything that you'd like to ask about.
I'll ask. Your experience in working with the people that you do, how do you relate to that 3B, looking at decisions from the point of view of my death? I mean, I don't see that as real race-oriented and probably not real. I haven't heard people talk that way in terms of making decisions. Can you flesh that out a little bit?
That's a good point. I don't think we want to go there. Again, you know, I'm talking here of Ignatius, who thought that this was important. I guess I myself even kind of put that at a distance.
I remember an evangelist preaching years ago said, "I'm not so worried about the sweet by and by as the nasty now and now."
Yeah.
Because the sweet by and by is taken care of. It's the nasty now and now that's the how we feel today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think what that, you know, thinking about decisions in light of my death, what that speaks to for me is we only have a limited amount of times, and sometimes you need to focus, you know, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, and I think, is it a Stephen Covey thing? And he says, you know, sit down and write your obituary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
what do you want it, what do you want it to say?
And that's Harold Kushner, who says that people's greatest concern is not dying from cancer or fear of the atomic bomb, but rather in their living nor in their dying will they have made a difference, therefore they will not be remembered, which is what Steve's going at.
And I think the gift of the home is that where I work is that these people, a lot of them have wonderful stories of their life that need to be told. And I can tell that in the celebrations of life that we have at the home. And I think that it makes a difference for the other residents there because they, when they hear that, they say, oh yes, my life has made a difference too. And they're at the point where they're just sitting. You know, I mean, there a lot of life for them is just being, like it was for Ignatius as he was laying there with, you know, healing from the cannonball operation there. What do you want to look back upon, I guess, when you are in that state, whether that be at home or, you know, in some kind of group home or assisted living or whatever. My father was never in a nursing home. My mother took care of him, and in her taking care of him, I think is one of her most endearing qualities, because she did it for 5 years, and now she lives in assisted living at 99 and going on 100. I think she'll make 100. And without that caring for my father, I don't know. She might have given up. But more questions. This is good.
Yeah, I will continue on the same one, because basically, from the point of view of my death, that's the, you mentioned legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever we talk about legacy, we're dependent upon other, how others see and perceive. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would rather just simply say to myself, regardless how it's perceived, I must do what I feel compelled to do under God. Yeah, the faithfulness. And that may be perceived as good, may not be perceived as so great.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a very good point. God is, you know, in a sense, what we follow, you know, that inner sense of presence. And like the first story, again, it's always the list, it's following somebody's orders or influence that propel us for a while, and then finally that fades away. And okay, who am I really here? And what's God calling me to? Not an easy decision, or you know, for us to make sometimes.
I'll shut up. But when you talked about obituaries, and I think, you know, I've buried hundreds of people, and we all read obituaries. You know, after you're 50, you tend to look on that page every day, but. It always says, well, they like to golf, they like to travel, and this kind of thing. I mean, that's what it always is. And I, as a pastor, I go, oh, yeah. but really, what we are remembered for, if you think about particularly those people that have been most close to you, they listened, they cared, they were compassionate, they were there for you. You know, faithfulness is what George and I were talking about.
Yes. And you miss their being, you know, just who they are in that special way. Who they are.
What did you say in the beginning? Our life is a journey of calls and...
Storms.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Many storms, many calls.
I had a thought up here in the balcony. We're doing child care while we're listening to this.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the hardest things about discernment is in you know, our stage in life, my husband's and mine in our 40s, we've got three little kids to take care of, you know, security versus self-actualization and spirituality. And I think it's really hard to sort those things out. And what tools do you see in Ignatius for thinking those things through? Because it's easy, I think, to say, well, here's the spiritual plane, here's how this works, and then we still have to pay the mortgage. And I think pulling those two things together is something I'm looking for a better understanding of.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I deal with that myself, having a 99-year-old mother, two, you know, teenagers, and my job, and doing spiritual direction, and The only thing I can say is that God makes changes very slowly and incrementally, you know? So if there's something you can start with to make some changes in the routine, the routine's still gonna be there. But what's opening up that's new for you? You know, if anything, that's kind of a challenge again. I'm not sure, because I don't know what your life is about, what you know, passions you have and that kind of thing. But without making room for some of those, or for prayer in some way, I think then life becomes one thing after another. And Ignatius would say that that's very common for people. And when we have a retreat in daily life for 9 months, the first 3 months, we sit with the people that are involved with that, and they continue to say, I don't have time for prayer. It's hard. I mean, I'm not used to this. And finally, they get it, and there's a peace, and they finally knew that they could do it. But you know, it just took somebody that was there every couple weeks for them to listen to them, listen to their struggles, and there was a companioning that went on. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, but an Ignatius tool then is prayer.
Right, definitely. Okay.
Is prayer using?
Many different, whatever method that works for you. I read in this Dark Night of the Soul that it took Teresa of Avila 2 decades to feel comfortable with meditation, contemplative prayer. She said some people can feel comfortable in that in 2 days. So, I mean, people are so different in the ways that they approach prayer. Some people are very... They want a form for a prayer. Reading the Psalms is something that can be very beneficial for people. There's walking the labyrinth. There is just going out and walking in nature or in your city, your place. And those kind of things you may not know. Again, it's something there's a way of reading scripture 2 or 3 times and letting it sink in. You know, that's another form of prayer. On Thursday, I'm going to give another talk on drawing and spirituality. That's where I found my own delight. And I've been doing it for like 25 years, just spending a little time at night drawing a portrait of a friend. And that's given me, you know, so much. So and that's what direction is about too, you know, spiritual companioning, to know somebody well enough to say, you know, maybe God is calling you to do this. As a spiritual director, God is the director, and you are the one that's in charge, really. And in kind of discerning, where is God in my life here, in this busy routine, and where is there Sabbath in this? And what's holding me back? Not an easy question. And I appreciate your question. Yeah. Others, from that too, maybe some other people have some light on that.
Well, Marva Dawn writes on keeping the Sabbath.
Holy, right, excellent book.
And also simply the concept of doing and being, you know, we are such doers.
I think that, you know, I have teenagers now, and constantly when the kids were little, the adjustment of being home with the kids, there's a whole part of you where you feel you're gifted in so many other ways, and yet you have to parent these children, and you fight that at first, and you try to discover what your gifts are outside of being a mother, and after a while, the prayers change into how am I as a mother and a parent, how I'm growing, and a lot of that idea of the seasons of life, that there's seasons in life and you'll come back to, and there will be time later to grow again as an individual, but you know, so you kind of set some of that external calling out and grow in this place, and it will pass, and the time for more freedom outside of the home comes again. You know, I'm trying to rest in that. I kept looking outside of the home, but I wasn't going to get out there, you know, and just be who God wants you to be in your parenting and in your walk.
Yeah. One of the things that Ignatius says about prayer is that if you can skip all other types of prayer, but don't ever skip the examine, which is what was the most meaningful thing today, what was the most loving thing today that happened to me, and what was the least. If that's all you do, and you can do it with your kids too, we did it with our children when they were really young. What's the favorite part of the day?
that before bed all the time, every night. Yeah.
And whatever it is that really gives you life, you want to do more of. So that gives you that direction to say, yeah, I really need to make some time for this. And a lot of it can be very, very spiritual stuff. You know, like just reading a passage or something like that that's meaningful to you. And scripture reading may not be meaningful to you. I don't know. Being quiet, maybe. I've talked to all kinds of people, and they have different ways of praying and of finding that what gives them life. I guess the other thing is you can look at your all the ways that you're doing things with your family and say, what in each of those areas was something that I really appreciated, and what was draining about it? You know, I mean, even though, because we want to say that everything's horrible or everything is wonderful, and that's really a lie. I mean, because there's both in everything that we do. It really is. And what Ignatius forces us to look at is what's, you know, where's the grace in that? And what is really draining you? And in the draining, there's also something that God has for you, Ignatius would say, in the draining too. But being responsible, or whatever that means. Other questions. Let's see, some of this. What is the area of my discernment? Is another question here. What are some ideas? What are some discernments that you thought of as I went through this? Mine was vocational, but
you constantly, as church workers, have to decide what you're saying yes and no to.
Right.
And ideally, we would be seeking God's wisdom in that and working with our spiritual gifts rather than guilt and all the other, you know, ways we make our decisions and overstress ourselves. And
got lots of choices. We are free will people, right? What are the kinds of discernment?
I think deciding what not to do is—it's sort of what you were saying too. But life is so busy, just jammed. And I think, well, if I had 8 days a week, I'd fill that one up too. You know. And what to say no to is really hard.
And how to find Sabbath? Yeah, how do you find that? That's a discerning thing.
I mean, the passage last night with from Paul was that, you know, the things I don't want to do, you know. I mean, he struggled with that too.
You know, I also think trying to be intentional when really you just got to get some stuff done. You know, trying to be intentional about choices and about how you do things. It's not something I'm able to do. It seems like a luxury, and I guess I struggle with that because I know that it can be a real gift to do that, but I also know that some stuff has just got to get done. So I get a little impatient with that.
But you're worth it. You know, the intention to do that what you desire, and you know, if there's something you're longing for, it's important. It really is. And again, to imagine this God that loves you so much, I don't think desires for us to work ourselves into the ground and to have such busy, busy lives. I don't think that's what God desires. I really don't. And I know Holden gets busy, right? How many here are, anybody here on staff? One, two, just trying to get a picture of the rest are guests. The other question here is, how does discernment fit with who I am called to be? what are you called to be? You know, a parent. It's a one calling you can't run away from. Or a son that cares for aging parents. Mm-hmm. Daughter.
Well, maybe I should raise my hand. My wife said, keep your hand down. But I couldn't resist a little bit there.
Yeah.
And Gary will, you know, probably talk to you later. But I think we cause ourselves some difficulty. And some of the things I hear here kind of reinforce my own thinking. But I think things get difficult when we tend to preoccupy ourselves with I and self, mm-hmm. as opposed to focused externally as to what you can do to make a difference and not worry about yourself quite so much. And how you're going to be remembered or what your obituary is going to read should not have any bearing whatsoever. In fact, I could care less if I have an obituary. It's whether you've done something along the way, and if you remember, that'll take care of itself, but that's not the motivating factor. And so anytime I get in trouble, it's maybe when I'm too preoccupied with how can I have more time for myself or whatever. And maybe it's just time to take I come to a retreat or something like this, it's time to kind of step away and take a deep breath and kind of analyze yourself. I think one of the most difficult things is getting to know yourself. Mm-hmm. Before you can kind of deal with some of the things we're talking about here today.
Well, you know, a comment on that. You know, I would say that probably you're one of these people that is doing what you need to do, and it's really truly more of what who you are. So that's not it isn't a point for you. So I think that's. That's you, what you're saying is very much true to you, very much. I would just say, yeah. Ignatius was really centered on what our life does for others. He really was. That was important to him. To take care of those, but using what comes from what you are given. And again, I sense that you're using what you've been given. But some of us struggle with that. We do, and you know, it's a little harder. For example, I'll take this question, yeah. Back there.
I was just gonna say that we have a friend who is an extremely wealthy, powerful lawyer in downtown Chicago. And he got a cancer, and then the cancer was cured, I hope, I think. And he quit his major law firm, mm-hmm. and has devoted his life to the environment, which is his real passion. And so now he's giving money and full time as a volunteer to environmental causes in a very effective way, because he was a good manager and a good lawyer. But that isn't so much that he wanted it to be written in his obituary, it's just that he saw the frailty of life and thought, I don't want to do this with my life. Even though this happened when he was 57,
mm-hmm.
so very successful, wealthy lawyer, powerful. He just quit cold turkey and went into this other way of life. And they've had to sell their very expensive home and move into a somewhat more modest home. Trust me, still much nicer than mine, but I mean, they have plenty of money. But the point is that he didn't want to waste another minute doing the work he was doing because he felt so excited about having a new lease on life.
That's great. I've heard a couple of stories about that from people that I was sat with a couple years ago here at Holden, how their life has changed. And I just can't believe it, what God has done and changed them. The other thing I want to emphasize and think I learned from being around these Jesuits that's really exciting is you can take one of these phrases and you say, this really does not fit me at all. I want to throw it out. And that's okay. So all of this stuff, this is not all applying to all of us. There may be one that you're, oh, that really hits me. But the rest we can throw out. And I never was raised like that in the Lutheran church. I had to, you know, apply to all the things. You know, go ahead.
I think that, you know, as good Lutherans, we can look back at our baptism, and if we, at all of our ages in our life, ask ourselves, in reference to the blessing, and may you be gifted with the spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. Just ask yourself,
in
the spirit, yeah, how God has gifted you with those gifts, because mm-hmm. God has gifted all of us in different ways with those. I think that's a good way to help in your own discernment. How has God gifted me with the spirit of wisdom and understanding and counsel and might? And how do I gift that to others?
Right, that's right, sure, yeah.
Today, I listened to you previously when talking about the storms of life and so on, and I think that everyone sees some of those junctures of life in a different way. I could relate to some of those things, but I didn't see them as storms, and yet others might perceive them as storms. And almost the same way with some of these methods, some of these approaches to discernment, that no one is kind of saying is going to fit everyone.
Right.
And even anyone's perception of one of these statements may be entirely different from another mm-hmm. one.
Absolutely.
And I lock into one down into the seven essentials that our decision or choice will fit with who we believe we are and our best to be the selves. But someone may not tie into that one. As you perceive these to be fit into your own life,
yeah.
they can serve as good tools for
right, yeah. right. I mean, hopefully you'll take this with you and use it a little bit with your own reflection on your life. The other one, you know, that's again the question here: how am I likely to jeopardize or torpedo this decision? I mean, how many times when you got to make a decision and you put it off, mm-hmm. or you don't, you know, you sabotage it with your own.
We'll do everything tomorrow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to be aware of that's what you're doing. I think that's important. I didn't, you know, when I first saw that chaplaincy, that email, I didn't want to go. I mean, I said, I'm not old enough, you know? I'm not qualified. Why would this apply to me? You know, it was that kind of reaction. So, it came true. Anything else? Otherwise, I'd like to close with the song that's on the back side of it.
Can I say one thing for
yeah,
you?
Sure.
Your voice from the balcony?
Yeah.
One thing that really hearkened to me was when you talked about the flow of the call, the struggle.
Yeah.
And it's a process. It just kind of weaves up and down throughout your life. And I think it's probably a human desire, certainly my desire is just the opposite, to keep things constant. And I find myself working myself to the bone, because I don't want, I resist change, and I don't want to be changed because I kind of fear, well, you know, what's something else on the horizon might be worse than what I've got now. And
yeah.
I've got a lot of struggles, a lot of problems now, but you know what, look at how much worse it could get. And so, and being able to give yourself permission to acknowledge the ups and downs in life, and the waxing ways, and the flows, and the calls, and the struggles, and if that's okay, I think it's I saying it out loud, I think it's going to help me accept it better, so I thought I'd better say something.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's really hard. That's a big challenge for me. And so that was one of the key things from your talk.
Thank you. That's very, very good. And I think that even though you have these ways of sabotaging, it's not that, you know, that makes you a bad person or anything. It's just, you know, it's just that, you know, it is a struggle. And it increments of, you know, little steps, and the bell will ring shortly, but let's sing Be Not Afraid here. How many are familiar with this? Heard before?
We shall cross the barren desert, but you shall not die of thirst. You shall wander far in safety, though you do not know the way. You shall speak the words.
Wednesday and Friday this week, either day or both days.
Thank you.